You are Locked On Pirates, your daily Pittsburgh Pirates podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, everybody, and welcome back to Locked On Pirates. I am your host again, who always does the most, Ethan Smith, and I hope you guys are having a great Thursday. What in the world is today? 11th. There we go. Awesome. And I told you guys we had a big podcast this week, because if you're on YouTube, we have, and you may know him, he is a series, the most, or what am I saying? I can't do my intro today, guys. The Hater's Guide to pretty much every major American sports league. Days of Our Steelers, very fun. If back in 2018, it was definitely very fun as he faced palms. But we have Urinating Tree today, big YouTube personality. How you doing today, man?
I'm doing all right, brother. How are you?
I'm doing great. Like we said before this started, we're both Pirates fans, so we're doing as good as possible right now. And I mean, I guess the Penguins are probably giving us all anxiety every single night, considering they have 24 comeback wins in all
there. The Penguins are a very infuriating team to watch. They're very aggravating because they'll have these moments where they just like, they'll have these 5 to 10 minute spurts where they're playing just elite hockey. Mm-hmm. And then they just do nothing and they're flat. And it's just really just painful to watch. Like, it's not even fun. It's just like, okay, are you going to show up today? Are you? I mean, we know what you can do, but are you going to do it?
Oh, yeah. Sadly, the Pirates, who we are talking about today, will not be doing that. They will just probably be a bottom dweller all year. So what have you seen from Pittsburgh, like the Pirates, so far in the Ben Cherington era? Like, so far?
It's hard to really tell because of everything that's happened. Yeah, I mean, in the sort of like a GM style, it takes a couple of years to really get that transition going. And the one thing I've really agreed with, and I've not and I wasn't a fan of like Huntington buying for a team that wasn't that good, especially Chris Archer.
Yeah.
But the thing there is, at least he recognizes that this team isn't going to compete at the current level it is. I mean, I saw with Marte, I felt they should have done more last year, but I feel like, I mean, they got good returns for a bunch of players. I thought they got a good return for Musgrove, Tyone. I don't know many of the prospects they got. Josh Bell. I mean, I wish he had higher value, but
yeah,
I mean, that's still like a not bad return. I felt like next moves are probably going to be Broughton Frazier, maybe Todd Frazier.
I mean, too. Todd Frazier could probably help a really good team. And I mean, so far in spring training, I think he has like 2 or 3 home runs in like 7 games. So, I mean, that could help a team that wants to win.
Yeah, that's a deadline guy. You could probably get like a guy in A-ball for him.
Yeah.
Maybe a little more if the demand's higher.
And going back to the Tyone trade, actually, right now, Miguel Yajure, who is one of the prospects the Pirates picked up, actually played Major League Baseball last year for New York. And there's a possibility, and I've been hearing about this, about like how the shortened year last year, you're not going to see a lot of pitchers pitch 200 innings like usual because like all that stuff, that the Pirates might flirt with a 6-man rotation. So there could be an immediate impact with a guy like that coming over from New York who's looked pretty impressive so far in spring training, and he could be maybe that 5th or 6th option. So that's one thing that I agree with, too, is you go look at the trade for Gerrit Cole in to Houston, and you see what we got back for that, and then you compare it to what we got back for Jameson Taillon just based on numbers and how it is now. Mm-hmm. Those trades are just astronomically on different sides of being good and bad. And the Taillon trade was like way better for a guy who is now on the same team as Gerrit Cole. And we don't even have Musgrove anymore, who we acquired from that trade. The only person I believe we still have that we acquired from that Gerrit Cole trade is Colin Moran.
Colin Moran.
Yep. So,
is Feliz gone?
He might still be there. I don't remember. There's so many bullpen arms right now that I can't remember. Trust me, my listeners are always telling me, like, that guy's gone too. I'm like, yeah, trust me. There's been how many moves the Pirates made this offseason that, like, one guy goes and 5 new guys come in?
I just checked. Looked like Feliz is still on the roster.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's like, I've never been that crazy about him, but it looks like Jason Martin's gone, which he doesn't. the thing with like the Gerrit Cole trade, it was just like a bunch of magic beans that were MLB ready. And it felt like something that Dave Littlefield would do. It's just like, okay, this is one of the best pitchers we've developed since probably Drabek, maybe 100% longer than that. And then you trade him for like next to nothing. I'm like, dude, you're.
Yeah, and speaking of right now, too, I mean, one big thing that people have noticed, and I know spring training stats don't really mean a lot. I kind of got blasted on this for a tweet that I made yesterday because the Pittsburgh Pirates somehow have the best ERA in spring training right now. I don't know how with like what we're working with, but we did acquire new pitching pitching coaching, all that good stuff, farm director. They basically have blown up everything at this point. Everything's new. There's like almost no ties to the Neil Huntington era at this point. And one thing that I was saying, like that even Jeff Hartley, one of our pitchers, was like, I have a four pitch sequence that I don't know how to use or didn't know how to use. And now I'm learning how to use it. And I agree with you. It's going to take probably until I'd say 2023 to really see what Charrington does with this team. But there's a lot of more positives in the negatives right now. Like really the biggest negative, obviously, is you're going to go like 60 and whatever. Like you're probably going to maybe win 65 or 70 games if you get lucky. But there's a lot of talent in the farm system again with a new farm director. So I'm sure you know some of the bigger guys, but who would you be most excited for coming up in the next couple of years?
I'd say the next couple of years, one of the guys I'm kind of keeping an eye on is Mason Martin, the first baseman. Yeah. Like he seems like he's got good power. Jack Hermann was another one I was kind of intrigued by in A-ball. Like New Jersey didn't get much opportunity. But those are the two that are kind of like my under-the-radar guys. O'Neill Cruz, obviously, would be a good one. Interested to see what Hudson Head can do, the big prize we got in the Musgrove trade.
Yeah.
He was apparently one of the Padres' like top 10 prospects.
Yeah, I don't think he's gotten any time in spring training yet. I've been watching most of the games. I don't think he's gotten any time in there yet. Do you think O'Neill Cruz fits in the outfield, though? That's one of the big questions I ask a lot. Is he an outfielder?
I'm not sure. I mean, they tried the Cole Tucker experiment in the outfield last year. It didn't really work out that well.
No, it did not at all.
It was like John Jaso in right field. It was like, Jesus.
Yeah, I've been on record saying Cole Tucker is exclusively a shortstop and needs to be productive as a shortstop. And it's crazy because a lot of my viewers or listeners, viewers, however we want to consider it, have also said, like, this could be a make or break year for Cole Tucker, and he's 24. It's very crazy because you look at the middle infield, it's easily the strongest part of the Pittsburgh Pirates right now. You have Eric Gonzalez, Kevin Newman, Adam Frazier still here. He's still, like, making a difference. O'Neill Cruz, if he stays there, and Cole Tucker. And Wilmer Defoe, who we picked up in free agency. That's six guys that are fighting for two spots.
Yep.
So who would you want in the middle infield going into this year that would be productive per se?
Middle infield, I'd roll with Kevin Newman at shortstop first off. I think he still has the bat. He had a down year last year, obviously, but a lot of players had down years.
Yeah.
I would say give him a shot. And then at second base, I'd probably say maybe – Frazier could work with like maybe a platoon with Gonzalez.
Yeah.
Tucker. I mean, Cabrian Hayes has third base down. And I mean, he's pretty much going to be the face of the franchise for a hot minute.
Yeah. Which I mean, I hope that doesn't hurt him in his development that we're pushing that on him already. Like he's really good. I think people have seen that. Like in spring training, every time he hits the ball, it's like, it's going somewhere in the outfield, even if he hits it right at somebody. I don't know how many times he's hit the ball in the infield this spring, but it hasn't been a lot. And I mean, his one big question when he was coming up was, is his bat going to be as good as his defense? And so far, especially last September, it's been ridiculous. And I mean, some people have even said, if he does good this year, does he have potential of being a top 10 third baseman in baseball by next year if it stays that way?
Oh, if he's top 10 third baseman, I mean, you've got – I mean, not trying to think in that way, but he has near infinite trade value. I mean, you've got one of the premier assets to build a core around. He's your new Andrew McCutchen, if that's the case.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and I mean, this is the thing, too, is they've already had extension talks with him. which is kind of nuts because the Pirates don't usually do that with younger players.
They're trying to depress the salaries so they don't have to pay a shit ton come arbitration. Yeah. They did it with Tabata and Polanco and Marte and a little bit with Kutch. I mean, obviously, Tabata didn't work out. Polanco has not worked out, and they might have to eat that salary.
Yeah, and the thing is with Polanco is some people have said, like, yeah, this is the last year of his deal. And I firmly have said I think he's gone after this year. I don't think he has trade value.
I'm not at that rate.
Yeah, I don't think he has the trade value at all. The only way that we would be able to trade him is if he comes out from April to June, hits 25 to 30 home runs, and is batting around 250.
Yeah.
That's the only way. And that's very difficult to do because that's usually what he does over an entire year. So he would have to do what he does over an entire year in 3 or 4 months. And I mean, it's crazy because there's so many guys at the Pirates that if they do well, you could trade them. Like Colin Moran is another guy like that right now.
Yep. Moran, you could probably get something decent there.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, Adam Frazier, if he comes out and does well, also, there's a team I know over there on the West Coast in Oakland that lost both of their middle infielders this year that could really use one. It's a very interesting season for Pittsburgh because one thing that I've seen people get kind of aggravated about is they don't like the timing of where we're at because the NL Central, to me, is easily the worst division in baseball this year.
Oh, yeah.
By a long shot.
Oh, yeah.
But we just happen to be the worst team in that division. And who do you think wins the NL Central this year?
Man, my first bet's St. Louis.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you look at every single team, they have significant flaws. Chicago has done huge dismantling. They just traded one of their best pitchers. They're not really replacing anybody in the system besides maybe bringing back Jake Arrieta. Yeah, good luck with that. Cincinnati, they had rumors of blowing it up throughout the offseason. They just lost their Cy Young winner. They lost their closer. They've taken a hit in pitching. You don't know how their hitting's going to react because, I mean, they've been ice cold for the past 2 years. Milwaukee, they've been dealing with a huge transitional crisis. They seem like they're a type of team that's in a limbo. Mm-hmm. St. Louis, I mean, for all the positives, they do have huge holes in their lineup.
Yeah,
they have, like, question marks in the rotation, bullpen, and then they have some aging assets.
Yeah, and I mean, for Cincinnati, I think it's always funny because Locked On Reds, we do a division crossover day every Wednesday over here. So I talk to the other teams in the division before the season starts. And I joked with them. I said, yeah, you got to keep in mind the Pirates scored as many playoff runs as you did last year.
Jesus.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, that's just how we have to play it over here. But that's one thing I said is everybody's like, oh, the Pirates are just here. Realistically, if Chicago, Cincinnati, Milwaukee and St. Louis lose too many games to the Pittsburgh Pirates, that could be the difference between you winning the division or being in fourth place.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's almost like we're like the catalyst to whoever wins the division. Like who beats this team that they should beat every game more often than not?
Look at what happened in 2015. You know why the Pirates didn't win that division? They couldn't beat Cincinnati and Milwaukee.
Yep.
They were the bottom feeders of their division.
And it's the same logic. Yeah, it really is. And Chicago was beating them. And it was interesting too when I did that crossover with Locked On Reds, the Pirates actually have a winning record against Cincinnati since 2019. They're 15-14, which is very interesting to me. I was like, so Cincinnati probably has that creeping in the back of their head, like at like 0.01%, like, oh yeah, we're competing for this division that's the worst division in baseball. But we also have to keep in mind that our rivals like beating us and also fighting us, but we're not going to get into that. Like it's basically like WWE on the field. I would not be surprised if we saw Luis Castillo versus like somebody in the Pirates bullpen.
Kyle Crick's still around, so he could probably throw down.
Yeah, of course. So now on this part, we're going to get into something more that you do and I enjoy a lot. And if you guys have heard them, I enjoy a lot because I will say this about you. You have a lot more baseball knowledge and sports knowledge than me. Some of my knowledge of sports comes from you, especially in the haters guides. You've definitely had some very interesting videos about the Pittsburgh Pirates in past years. I can't remember the name of the 2017 one, because the 2017 one was like the last year of like decent competitive baseball.
That was when everything fell apart. Yeah.
Yeah. And, but his haters guides usually go, he goes over every team. He basically says, this is what's going on. This is what happens. Like, whatever. But who is the most hated team in baseball this year to you? I feel like this answer is probably pretty easy for me at least, but who is the most hated team in baseball this year for teams to hate that aren't fans of that team?
Probably Houston still. That would be my guess. I mean, Dodgers maybe if you have that rich guy envy. Padres if you're thinking like maybe the sort of envy of like a team trying to compete. I mean, Yankees, Cubs, you know, like the big market teams are usually big targets for that. I would say, I mean, teams I'm more infuriated by are the ones that sold, like Cleveland, Colorado. Yeah. Oakland was kind of rumored. There was that whole rumor about trading Matt Chapman for a bit.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the Dodgers are just up there now because they're kind of like the Lakers of the
MLB. The old Yankees, I feel like.
Yeah, they're like just there every year now. And honestly, I've said this too. If they don't get injured this year, they're not losing to anybody. Like, you look at their team.
Their only threat's the Padres.
Yeah, and even then, like, the Padres might have a better pitching rotation, but when you're facing an offense that features Cody Bellinger, Mookie Betts, Justin Turner, and, like, all these other guys that can just knock the ball out of the ballpark, I don't see them. I think I did my MLB predictions episode Monday, and I said the Padres and Dodgers would play each other in the NLDS, obviously, because I think the Dodgers will have the best record in baseball. And I said it would go to 6 or 7 games, but I think like at some point the Dodgers are just going to be like, okay, we're done with this. Like, we're just going to overpower you. But I do like the idea of what San Diego's doing. They're like a lower market team that said, you know what? We have this Goliath in our division. Let's trade some pieces. Let's buy some pieces and try to beat this team.
They're trying to fight fire with fire.
Yeah. And they're like, okay, like, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But I mean, also too, I can expect this from you. You can go ahead as well and preview this, but I would expect some Tony La Russa talk in your haters guide to the 2021 MLB season.
I'm still puzzled by that hire.
Again,
I know they needed a new manager. I thought Rick Renteria was not going to get them further than what they were, but I do not understand that at all. I mean, you have a guy who hasn't managed in almost 10 years. He had a disastrous tenure in Arizona as an executive. People forget that. Mm-hmm. And you bring him back as like a 78-year-old dude who may not be able to relate to the modern player and is only there because Jerry Reinsdorf wants a cigar buddy. Like, he's buddies with him.
Yep.
Like, I'm just like, what? Dude, you have a team on the cusp of something great. Like, what are you doing?
And for me, when I did my predictions episode, I basically kind of took manager out of the picture. I know I shouldn't, but from a pure talent level, I do think that White Sox team could win the American League because the American League is pretty wide open this year, if you really look at it. And I mean, I really think that Lucas Giolito can win the Cy Young this year. Mm-hmm. I do think that can happen. And Tim Anderson, Jose Abreu, and I can't think of his name now. The other big bat they have in their lineup.
There's Moncada, Jimenez, Luis Robert.
Luis Robert, yeah. He's actually on one of our ads is betonline.ag. He has the second highest odds to win the AL MVP behind Mike Trout.
Already.
So it's very interesting to look at that team and be like, this could be a World Series team. But I do think La Russa is basically the make or break in that. Like, it's either he propels them to that or they're back in the same spot they were last year in the playoffs, losing their like a wild card game or losing in the first round of the playoffs and scrambling to figure out what to do again. But I do also think that that team has a lot of shades of that Cubs team that won the World Series a couple years ago. They were rebuilding for a while. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of good pieces now. And they could probably win. It's just, it's kind of funky that, again, Tony La Russa is your manager when there were other good options out there. And that's where I'm at with it.
Yeah, I'm the same way, I feel like, especially with the White Sox. I mean, I'm pretty much going to echo your points.
Yeah, and I mean, and the thing is, too, that division only got worse. The only team that maybe got better was the Twins, and that's because of the Anderson Simmons acquisition.
They're still a wild card, though. They're very inconsistent.
Yeah, and I honestly think the White Sox are the best team in that division by a long shot.
Like, yeah, Cleveland blew it up. Like, Detroit and Kansas City are still lost at sea.
Yeah, so they don't know what they're doing. And realistically to me, when I was also doing that predictions episode, and I'm interested to see what you say on your haters guide, but the AL West to me also is like a very interesting division.
I think Seattle might take a step up, especially as their prospects come up to play.
Yeah, I predicted Jared Kelenic winning the AL Rookie of the Year.
Juan Rodriguez.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I had Oakland winning that division too. Just because, I mean, everybody said, like, Houston still has most of their core. Like,
They lost a lot of big leaders, man. Yeah, Verlander, he's going to be out for a while. They've lost George Springer, which I pretty much was the big piece of their hitting core.
Yep. And that's where I'm at with it, too. And I think that's going to hurt them a lot.
And also, you have to consider Framber Valdez is out for the year with that finger injury. That's going to hurt even more.
Yeah. And I mean, that's why, and I think Oakland not blowing it up was the right idea. Like, not trading Matt Chapman, that was the perfect idea. Like, they have so much talent on that team that just needs to take, like, the smallest step up. Like, if they can take the smallest step up and win the division this year, I think they will take so many strides into the right direction that they'll be like, why did we almost blow this up anyway? Realistically, their only biggest hole is, like, the back end of their pitching staff and the middle infield.
And they can buy that at the deadline.
Yeah.
And I mean they really technically downgraded at a few positions. I mean, they downgraded from Semien to, Elvis Andrus and from Liam Hendricks to, Trevor Rosenthal. I don't know how you feel about Rosenthal and his revival. But at the same time, I mean, they didn't really do that much in the offseason, which is kind of a good thing and a bad thing.
Yeah. Because, I mean, we saw what it did to the Reds when they bought all those players. I mean, they made the playoffs, but they didn't score a run in the playoffs. Yeah.
I saw that the year before, though. Like, they bought a bunch of the deadline, and they still didn't do much. And I'm just like, you shouldn't be buying. And they nearly blew it up, too.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, if any team ever wants to buy at the deadline when they're on the cusp of the playoffs, just look at what the Pirates did and just say no. Just don't do it. Don't trade Tyler Glasnow, Austin Meadows, and Shane Bass to the Tampa Bay Rays.
I was so furious when that trade was made.
Yep.
Because I didn't even think Chris Archer was that good. Plus, you're playing for a brand name recognition. I'm not even about Glasnow. He was never going to develop here. The issue is Austin Meadows.
Yeah, that was the
plus,
big
thing. You trade Shane Bass, who is, I think, still a top 100 prospect.
Yeah, and the sad part about that part, too, that I always tell Pirates fans – is it was Meadows and Glasnow in a player to be named later. Mm-hmm. So we're all like, okay, this isn't going to be some like big player in our system.
It's yes.
Like regular guy. And then all of a sudden, like a week or two later, they're like, Shane Baz is included in the Pirates deal for Chris Archer. And everybody's just like, what's going on here? Like what? Like you just traded one of your better pitching prospects out of nowhere and you considered him a player to be named later. I was like that. Like I will still forever be infuriated by that trade. Like I will.
I was pissed when they announced that trade. I was like driving around. I'm like, God damn it! What are you doing? Yeah. Like if I did like a live reaction to that trade deadline, I would have been furious.
Yeah,
I mean, furious.
And it's like, which one was worse, trading McCutchen to San Francisco or that? Like I always ask people that.
At least with McCutchen, you at least got a year of Brian Reynolds out of nowhere. But, I mean, that was more symbolic than anything.
Yeah. And I think Reynolds is going to have a bounce-back year this year as well. Yeah. I really do.
I didn't think he was going to be as bad as he was last year. Like, I thought there was going to be some regression because his BABIP was just absolutely ridiculous. But I thought he would be more like settle into, like, a 265, 275 hitter.
Yeah, not
– not go down to 150.
Yeah, 150, 230, wherever he is.
Yeah.
But, like, so as far as your MLB predictions, like – what are you expecting? Like, what are you expecting playoffs wise, awards wise? I've also been big advocate on Key Brian Hayes is winning Rookie of the Year at all costs. So like, that's where I'm kind of at right now. But awards wise, playoffs wise, who's taking home the pennant in October, all that kind of stuff, like super early, because we know it's still spring.
Oh yeah, there's way too much going on. I mean, obviously for the NL, it's going to be between the Dodgers and Padres. Whomever wins that, going to probably go on to the World Series. Like, my bet's on the Dodgers right now, just because I've always likened them to the Tampa Bay Rays with money. And they can just pretty much, oh, here's a problem. Yep, we're just going to put more money into it, and we're going to spend it wisely. They didn't just throw money around like they did in the Coletti era.
Yeah.
So, like, Trevor Bauer at $40 million, they know what they're doing there.
Oh, yeah. And isn't that third year, like, they can opt out of it, I think?
I'm not sure.
I can't remember. Yeah, I know there's something in that third year, because I know it's mainly a two-year, but there's, like, an opt-in or opt-out in the third year, if I'm not mistaken.
Looks like, oh, 22 and 23 are player options.
Yes. So he can opt in or opt out.
Yeah. 2022 is a $2 million buyout for Bauer. 2023 is $15 million for a buyout.
So they
and
can
a no trade clause to AL teams prior to the All-Star game. And a full no trade clause is if he's under Cy Young consideration in a given year.
Which he won't do, being like the third pitcher on that team.
You never know, man.
It's very possible. Yeah. I think so many people have said that he's their ace now, but I also think they forget Walker Buehler exists. So I'm like, you realize this
plus
guy
Dustin May.
Yeah. Dustin May as well. Like, I mean, you have Walker Buehler, Julio Urias, and Dustin May, who realistically, in my opinion, are almost all three at some point going to be better than Bauer was last year.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
you
not
also have to consider they're getting David Price back too.
Yes, which that's a decision you have to make. Who do you have as your fifth pitcher, or do you roll out with that six pitch rotation that we talked about earlier because of the fact that the most pitches by one pitcher this year might be 125-130? That's like a very big question going into this year. Is like pitching depth, I think, is going to decide the World Series this year.
Yes, you not also bad. Have to remember too, beginning of last year, first couple weeks, pitchers were dropping like flies because their elbows and shoulders were just cold. They weren't warmed up to game time action. And you saw a bunch of players go down. I mean, a bunch.
And it was a crazy year. Like, I mean.
Oh, yeah. It was a rough year for baseball.
And then I have to get into this, too, because it was a big news in baseball yesterday that the Texas Rangers just had to make themselves relevant somehow. By saying that they were going to have 100% capacity in Globe Life Park on opening day. And then reduced capacity between the month of April and May.
So why would you have 100% on opening day?
That's where the question was, is it was like, why do that? And then they didn't say a percentage on the
because I thought it was just going to be 100% throughout the year.
No, they said just on opening day. And then after that, it will be like or like an opening series. And then after that, it's going to go to reduced capacity. But they didn't name a number. So what is your reduced capacity at that point? Like if you're already at 100, you might as well just stay there.
Yeah. I mean, my guess is probably like 33% to 50%.
Yeah.
Mainly because it's Texas and also coronavirus is kind of dwindling down at this point. It's going to do a lull. I mean, I don't know if it comes back up again, but. I mean, at the same time, I feel like a lot of places are starting to open up. I think I just found out Oklahoma's opening up now. Yeah. A lot of the southern states are opening up. The only one I know that's a blue state is Connecticut.
Yeah, Georgia. Georgia over here, like where.
Yeah, they opened up a while ago.
And I'm Florida in Savannah, too. Georgia as well. And like St. Patrick's Day is next week.
Oh, lucky like, you. Pittsburgh's still locked down.
Yeah, people really, they just come in here and like they. Book their hotels like a year in advance. Like it's nuts. And I work in the service industry too. So
how
week is going to be next week.
How's the year been for you in the service industry? Cause I used to work there for 8 years. I mean, I like cringe to think of like what people were dealing with over the past year there.
So a lot of it is at first it wasn't too bad because I like the company I work for has 9 different restaurants just in the city alone. And the one that I worked for before only had 13 tables total. It was a small restaurant. So people didn't really care that much. They were compliant with the mass deal, but this was like right when it started. Yeah. Now I work at one that is like a full functioning restaurant with like an indoor area, patio, deck. Like that's like how it works. Valentine's Day weekend was when we had the biggest issue with people complaining because we sectioned our tables off for two people because that's how Valentine's Day works. People go and do their dates and everything and stuff like that. But we try to keep to the 6 foot deal. But when you have, when you're that busy, you just have to kind of push it to like get people sat down so you're not having complaints. But then like the next day we base a lot of our stuff on TripAdvisor. So the following Monday, like which would have been the next day, all these TripAdvisor said, this place does not follow COVID. This place doesn't do this. This place doesn't do this. And I'm like, you got like, you got to realize that for us, one, we're already meeting 100-150 people a day, at least, more than likely.
Yeah.
So we're already putting ourselves in danger of getting this because we don't know what you've been doing. And like, we don't know where you're coming from. Savannah is one of the biggest tourist cities in all of America, ironically, especially in the Southeast. And I mean, it's been stressful. Like, it's kind of annoying when you tell people, hey, you need to wear this to come in. And when you're like walking up and stuff, and then you walk past them and they're not doing it, but you're just so busy that you can't stop them from doing it.
Oh yeah.
Which is where I'm going to get like where I'm going to kind of segue into it too, with like, I know Pittsburgh is also allowing people in PNC Park from what I heard.
Yep. 20% capacity, yeah. I believe.
I just want to know how these teams are going to enforce this. That's like kind of where I'm at. Like, it's like, that's a lot. 20% is even what, like 7,000 people, I think.
So, I'm trying to think, it's what, 35,000 for, or it's like 38,000. So probably like 7,500.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's going to be very interesting how they enforce that. And I will say, I did go to the Jacksonville Steelers game this past year and they enforced it pretty well. Like, it was a pretty good balance of it, but it's very interesting to see how this is going to affect things. Because I mean, you look at other leagues, the NBA still really hasn't done it too much. There's only a couple teams that are doing it.
Yeah.
The NHL just started doing it again.
Kind of, but very small.
Yeah.
Penguins started it a couple weeks ago at, I think, 15%.
But that's one thing too, is like, is COVID going to have another impact on the MLB season again?
Maybe. I mean, it depends on the variants, I feel like. I mean, coronavirus in general is prone to mutations. Mm-hmm. So the potential is always out there.
And big news on that COVID front too, is Joey Votto already got placed on IR for testing positive for it.
Oh.
So, I mean, it kind of already started again. But I mean, what's going to happen? Like, and this is where I think more from the marketing side of things is like, oh, Dodgers, Padres, ESPN, Wednesday night baseball, like Danielson Lamet versus Clayton Kershaw. And then that morning, Danielson Lamet has tested positive for COVID. Not to put that on him, but like, what do you do marketing wise then? Then you have to thrust another pitcher in there again on a day that he shouldn't pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be very interesting.
The long relief.
Yeah, and it's going to be very interesting to see. Like, it's almost like another – it's so messed up to make a virus a game plan, but it's almost a game planning thing that these managers have to think about now if it happens.
Yeah, I felt like the NFL did that too. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I knew they were going to bull rush through the season, and I think the same thing is going to happen for baseball as well. Like, they're just going to bull rush through it and do what they can to get through.
And, I mean, we remember last year they almost stopped because of St. Louis and Miami for, like, the first, like, couple weeks because they literally were not able to play, like, not
even – they were able to – they had to call off for a couple weeks. Yeah, like, Miami had to literally play a team full of just replacement players for a while.
I remember that, too. I remember I think, like, 8 out of the 11 guys that they had playing in one game were all, like, guys that got signed that day.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, you need to be in Miami at this time to play baseball. But what else can we expect from your haters guide to the 2021 MLB season? You can go ahead and preview.
I'm thinking about just making it one part this time, not separating into AL and NL. But I mean, I'm hoping to get it out in the next few days. I'm currently editing it right now. So I did the vocals yesterday. I edited those down, gathered the footage. So hoping to get it out soon.
Awesome. Anything about the Pirates we should know beforehand?
Well, pretty much I'm just going to say they're blowing it up. That's pretty much
it. Yeah,
I mean, they are. I mean,
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting again just to see like if they make any more trades that are going to be like interesting to move forward. And I mean, I'm sure they will. Like they're going to probably be like well below sub 500 by the time July trade deadline hits.
And the good thing is tickets are going to be cheap. So I mean, that'll probably be my first time back into like, you know, a major stadium. It'll feel good.
Oh yeah, it will. And I mean, it's still one of the most beautiful parks in baseball with one of the worst teams.
That view from third baseline never gets old. I mean, the team on the field could suck, but you know what? View of the stadium.
Oh yeah.
The in game. I mean, it's a beautiful place to have a ballpark.
Oh yeah, 100%.
I can just pretend they're a minor league ball club. I'm supporting small business, right?
There you go. You might as well be. I mean, that's how Bob Nutting treats it.
Oh yeah, right. I thought like he'd actually invest in the money once they got good. It's like, yeah, I was wrong on that one. Oops.
Yeah, I kind of wish that story that came out on the Post-Gazette in 2019 would have been true about Mark Cuban trying to buy it. That would have
been. There was a rumor about Mark Cuban. There was rumors about, I think, Greenberg from the Rangers. There was rumors about Mario Lemieux and Ron Burkle.
That would have.
Which, I mean, I don't know how that would have gone because hockey has significantly fewer expenses than baseball does.
Yes. Yeah. So that would have been kind of like almost, I feel like Lemieux would have probably did like a money ball kind of deal. Like you would have.
Yeah. He would have been like, you know, he wouldn't have been cheap, but like, I don't know if he would have been able to afford a lot.
Yeah. And I'll go ahead and end on this question because it's been a question I've seen all over Twitter is, does baseball need a salary cap? Like, does it need it?
If it needs a salary cap, it needs a floor as well, because there is no way that Trevor Bauer should be making more money than the entire 26-man rosters of three teams.
Yeah.
Like that is not healthy for baseball whatsoever.
Yeah.
And I feel like there is a good shot of there being a work stoppage next year. Not because like I'm trying to be doom and gloom, but because, I mean, ownership and the players union have been butting heads for the past couple of years. You saw it last year with the negotiations where it delayed the season by what? Like a month, 2 months?
Yeah.
Just because they couldn't agree to anything, and they still can't agree to anything. Like the owners want expanded playoffs. The, you know, the players union wants other concessions as well. They're pissed that, you know, owners are colluding to depress player salaries. Major League Baseball itself lost over $3 billion last year. And I think that's leaning a lot on people's minds, especially the ownership, because, like, they don't want to lose money on their investments.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, if it happens, it happens. Like, it's
yeah. And I think it would be catastrophic for baseball if they were to do with the lockout stoppage, because they're already having trouble trying to relate to the modern audience. I mean, most of the modern audience is like on internet, not even on like baseball, like topics themselves.
Yeah.
From what I've seen, at least.
And one thing that we were talking about is the Locked On Sports Network. We have like hosts for every team. And we talked about this yesterday, is minor leaguers. Like right now, like me and you, like who pay attention to this stuff, like we know Wander Franco is going to be a really good player. Mm-hmm. We know like O'Neill Cruz or Quinn Priester, who are guys in the Pirates organization, have a very good chance at being good players. Jared Kelenic, stuff like that. But the normal viewer, when they see Wander Franco in a Rays jersey at some point, they're going to be like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
Like, and we were talking about this, and we know that NFL does red zone. Like the NFL does their red zone deal, right? Why not do something like that for major or like minor league baseball? But not necessarily for teams, but like the player that is on that team, if that makes sense. Like you can follow the top 100 prospects in baseball or like the top 30 or like the top 10 in your team, and you can just watch their games. It would make them more relatable because it's also, to me, and I've said this, there's so many minor league baseball players that have such good personalities that nobody figure out about until they get to the major league level.
Okay. Like minor league players are... Yeah, they're pretty much treated like shit.
Yeah, I mean, and they don't get paid at all.
Yeah, like, I mean, if you're lucky, you become a top draft pick, you can live off your signing bonus.
Yeah.
But, I mean, most minor leaguers, I mean, you're probably either like a ninth round pick or like a later pick just out of college, just trying to make a dream work, or you're a kid from the Dominican who got maybe like a $20,000 bonus and most of it went to his family.
Yep. Exactly. And it's just kind of sad, I guess, but it's also kind of interesting to gauge because, I mean, we also saw that there were some minor league teams lost this year because of the money. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of teams, and there had to be reformatting of, like, yep. how the stuff worked. Thankfully, most of the Pirates ones stayed the same, like Indianapolis and Altoona.
Yeah, I know, and they lost Bristol, I think.
Yeah, and I would be honest, too, and I said this to people, I would honestly, as a Pirates fan, with the way the season's going to go, I'd want to watch Altoona and Indianapolis games rather than watching the Pirates sometimes, because you're going to be seeing what's coming up in the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. You're going to get to see Nick Gonzalez, Quinn Priester, Mason Martin, Carmen Majinski, Brendan Malone, Leover Piguero. You're going to get to see all these guys that are going to eventually wear the black and gold in Pittsburgh. And, I mean, that's just where it is. But did you have any last things that you wanted to say about what could be coming up on your channel, all that good stuff, anything about the Pittsburgh Pirates, all that?
Well, not really. I mean, I'm hoping for a good baseball season at this point.
Yeah, 100%. I think everybody – I honestly, for the people that love baseball, I think it will just be a welcome thing to have off on a Saturday morning and watch a 105 baseball game on a Saturday, if it happens, or a 105 Sunday game. Like, either one, just like having a sport on that you can watch every day. Cause obviously no football right now. Basketball's just like coming after the All-Star break. So you're still waiting a couple months for playoffs, the NHL same way. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on, but baseball should be fun. Hopefully. Thank you so much for coming on. I'm honestly like flattered that you came on. I know it's kind of weird.
It's not a problem, dude. I always enjoy coming on these sort of things.
Oh yeah. And I mean, again, if you guys want to check his YouTube channel out, I am not kidding. It is actually called Urinating Tree.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, if you want to follow him on Twitter, it'll be very easy to find him because it says Antonio Brown is a Super Bowl champion.
I got to change that.
Yeah, and it will also be orange and brown because of the Cleveland Browns loss. So you can find all that. You can follow him on Twitter, where all of his social media. You can, again, follow me at MVP Ethan on Twitter. The underscore, not the dash, like Lucas said on our NL Central preview, and at Locked On Pirates. Again, thank you so much. And you guys have a great rest of your Thursday, okay?